the condition. Jacob sent for all his sons down to Zebulun and called them to council. They all sat before Hamor, lifting their hands and shaking their heads. The eldest among them, who set the key for the rest, were not the men to take up the idea as though they had no thought of anything better. They were at one in saying that the matter must be taken under advisement. Dinah, their sister, daughter of Leah, this priceless and lovely creature only just ripened, and to be given to Sychem, the son of Hamor? Certainly such a matter required the maturest consideration, and they asked for time to think. They were prompted in this by their commercial instinct in general, but Simeon and Levi had other ulterior ideas and cherished certain vague hopes, for they had never given up their former plan, and though the refusal of the water rites had never brought it to fruition, they thought that it might be forwarded by this wooing of Sychem. 3 days' time for consideration. Hamor was borne away, rather testy, but at the end of the time it was Sychem who came riding into camp on a white ass. His father had told him to attend to the affair himself, as indeed was most fitting to the impatience of his desire. He did not bargain nor disguise the feelings of his heart. He made no concealment of the fact that he was consumed by a fire of longing for Dinah the maid. "Ask what you like," said he. "Make bold your demands in presents and mourning gifts, for I am Sychem, son of the castle. I am splendid in the house of my father, and Baal is my witness that I will grant you your demands." So then they told him the condition that they had fixed among themselves, which must be fulfilled before any further discussion. We must pay close attention to the order of events, for it was not that later recorded in the fine language. According to it, Sychem had at once and straightway committed the evil deed and called down the stratagem and the violence of the brothers upon his head. But in actual fact, he only resolved upon deeds after Jacob's people had put themselves in the wrong towards him, and he saw himself fobbed off, if not cheated. They told him that, first of all, he must be circumcised. It was indispensable, for such as they were, and according to their beliefs, it would be a scandal and abomination to give their daughter and sister to an uncircumcised man. It was the brothers who had suggested this stipulation to the father, and Jacob, satisfied to have gained a little time by it, found nothing in principle to object to, although something wondering at his son's sudden piety. Sychem laughed aloud, and begged pardon, covering his mouth with his hand. "Is that all?" cried he. "Was that all they required? But, my lords, when he was ready to give one eye or his right hand to possess Dinah, what to him was the loss of anything so insignificant as his foreskin? By Sutek, there was no difficulty here, not the smallest. His friend Baset was circumcised and thought nothing of it. Not one of Sychem's little sisters in his house of delights would take the least offense at the loss. It was as good as done. It should be performed by the hand of one of the priests of the Temple of the Highest, a man skilled in healing. Directly he was whole, he would come again. And he ran off, beckoning to his slaves to follow with the ass. A week later he was back, scarcely healed, still inconvenienced by his sacrifice, but radiating confidence. He found the head of the family away on a journey. Jacob avoided the meeting, and let his sons act for him. He found himself pushed, after all, into the role of the devil Laban, and preferred to play it in absentia. Poor Sychem told the sons that their condition was fulfilled. It had been no such trifling matter as he had thought, but bothersome enough. However, now it was done, and the sweet reward earned. And what did the brothers say? "Done, yes," they answered him. "Yes, perhaps they would willingly think so, but done in the wrong spirit, without understanding, superficially, and quite meaningless. It was done, perhaps, but done simply for the sake of the female Dinah, not at all in the sense of marriage with him. And it was highly probable that it had been done with a metal knife, not with a stone one, as was indispensable. This alone made the whole thing most questionable. And moreover, Sychem, the son of the castle, had already a chief wife and sister, the only true wife, Rehuab, the Hivite woman. Dinah, daughter of Jacob, would be only one of his concubines. It was not to be thought of. Sychem fidgeted. How could they tell, he cried, in what spirit and understanding he had fulfilled the unpleasant condition? And as for the business of the stone knife, that they were bound to have told him beforehand. But as for being a concubine, the king of Mitanni himself had sent his daughter, named Gulichipa, with pomp and retinue, to marry Pharaoh, not to be the queen of the country, for the goddess Teia was that, but as a second wife. And if King Shutarna himself... Yes, said the brothers, that was very well for Shutarna and Gulichipa, but this was a matter of Dinah, daughter of Jacob, a prince of God and of the seed of Abraham, and that she could not become a concubine to Sychem of the castle would be plain to his understanding directly he consulted it. And this Sychem was to take as their final word? They lifted their shoulders and spread out their hands. Could they possibly appease him with a present? Two or three muttons, perhaps? Then there was an end of his patience. He had paid for his ardor with a good deal of vexation. The temple priest had not proved nearly so competent as he had pretended, and his awkwardness had resulted in much swelling, pain, and inflammation for Hamor's son. And this was the result. He gave vent to a curse, the burden of which was the consignment of the sons of Jacob to the weightlessness of light and air, which they tried to ward off with quick and practiced motions, and rushed away. 4 days later, Dinah disappeared. The abduction. Knowest thou of it? Again, we must give heed to the sequence of events. Sychem was a spoilt and rickety youth, not brought up to relinquish easily any sensual gratification he had set his heart on. But that is not to say that we must take literally those fairy tales of the shepherds which put him in the worst possible light. The reason why the story was graven so deeply in Jacob's careworn face was precisely that he himself, however much he desired to tell it and to believe it in its softened and improved form, knew very well, even as he did so, who it was had the first thoughts of violence and pillage, who had planned the affair from the start, and that Hamor's son had not stolen Dinah at all in the beginning, but wooed her honorably, and only when he had been cheated felt himself justified in making his happiness the basis of further negotiations. Dinah was gone, stolen, carried off. In broad daylight, in the open field, in sight of her own people, men from the castle had stolen upon her as she played with her lambs. They had put a cloth over her mouth, flung her upon a camel, and were far upon the way to the city before the men of Israel could mount to ride after. Gone she was, shut up in Sychem's house of delights, surrounded by all sorts of unknown and urban amenities. And Sychem held in haste his much-desired nuptials, against which she made no particular resistance. She was an insignificant thing, very yielding, without judgment or power of resistance. Whatever happened to her, provided it was vigorous and unequivocal, she took as natural and right. And Sychem did her no violence, quite the contrary. And the rest of the little sisters, including the first wife, Reuma, were most friendly. But the brothers, particularly Simeon and Levi, their rage seemed to know no bounds, and Jacob, bewildered and distressed, had to bear the brunt of it. Dishonored, violated, villainously seduced, their sister, their little black pigeon, their only one, and of Abraham's seed. They broke their ornaments, rent their clothing, put on sackcloth, tore their hair and beards, howled aloud and gashed their faces and bodies with knives until they were terrible to look upon. They flung themselves on their bellies, struck the ground with their fists, and swore never to eat food nor to avoid it before they had torn Dinah from the lustful sodomites and made, like the desert, the place of her shame. Revenge, revenge, assault, murder, bloodshed, torture, were all the words they knew. Jacob was profoundly agitated and cast down, painfully aware that he had behaved like Laban after all, and well knowing, too, that the brothers were now in sight of what had been their goal all the time. He had hard work to keep them even temporarily in leash, without laying himself open to the reproach that he was lacking in pride and fatherly feeling. He took part to some extent in their manifestations of grief and rage, putting on a soiled garment and somewhat disheveling his hair, but at the same time he was pointing out to them that there was not much good in tearing Dinah by force from the castle, as it would settle nothing and give rise to the fresh question of what they were to do with the shamed and ravished creature. Now that she was actually in Sycam's hands, no wise person could want her back. It would be the part of wisdom to moderate their grief and wait a little. And also, such a line of conduct seemed to be suggested by the liver of a sheep he had slaughtered in the emergency. The way things stood between the city and the seed of Abraham on the basis of their covenant, Sycam would doubtless be heard from himself before long. He would make new proposals and open up possibilities of putting a better, if not an actually gratifying, face on the ugly affair. And behold, to Jacob's own astonishment, they assented, and agreed to wait for the messenger. Their sudden composure disquieted Jacob almost more than their former raging. What was behind it? He watched them with misgiving, but was not a party to their counsels, and heard indeed of their new decision hardly sooner than did the messenger of Sycam, who, just as Jacob had expected, appeared after a few days, bearing a letter written in Babylonian upon several potsherds. It was polite in form, and in content no less friendly and ingratiating. It said, "To Jacob, son of Yitzchak, prince of God, my lord and father, whom I love, and upon whose love I set the greatest store. Sycam, son of Hamor, speaks, thy son-in-law who loves thee, heir of the castle, whom the populace exalt with shoutings. I am well. Mayest thou likewise be of good health, and may thy wives and thy sons and the people of thy house, thy cattle, sheep, and goats, and all that is thine, rejoice in the highest degree of well-being. Behold, Hamor my father hath at one time made with thee, my other father, a covenant of friendship, and sealed it. And there hath been between us and you a close friendship for 4 cycles, during which time it was my constant thought that the gods might keep it so and not otherwise, that as we are now friendly one with another, by commandment of my god Baal and thy god El Elyon, who are almost one and the same god, differing from each other only in trifles, so might it remain to all eternity, and through countless years of jubilee, in respect to the cordiality of our friendship. But when mine eyes beheld thy daughter, Dinah, child of Leah, the daughter of Laban, I desired most fervently that our friendship might not suffer as to its infinite duration, but also be increased in kind even 1,000,000-fold. For thy daughter is like a young palm tree by the waters, and as a pomegranate blossom in the garden. And for her sake my heart quivereth with desire, so that I knew that without her my breath would be of no worth. Then, as thou knowest, Hamor, prince of the city, whom the people acclaim, came out to speak with his brother, and to take counsel with my brothers, thy sons, and he returned comforted. And when I myself came to woo Dinah, thy daughter, and to beseech you for breath unto my nostrils, then you spoke, and said, Friend, before Dinah can be thine, thou must be circumcised in thy flesh, for otherwise it were an abomination before our God. And lo, I gave no offense to the heart of my father and my brothers, for I was friendly, and I said, I will do according to your will. For I rejoiced beyond all bounds, and sought Yahweh, the writer in the book of God, to do unto me that which you had said. And I suffered pain under his hands, and afterwards, so that mine eyes ran over with tears, and all this for the sake of Dinah. But when I came again, lo, it was of no avail. Then came unto me Dinah thy child, the condition being fulfilled, and I knew her upon my bed to my highest delight, and to hers no little, as she hath told me with her own lips. But that there might not therefore be discord between thy God and my God, let my father straightway fix the price and the conditions of my marriage with Dinah, who is so sweet unto my heart, that a great feast may be held at Shechem, in the castle, and we may all celebrate the wedding with laughter and with song. For Hamor, my father, will stamp 300 scarabs with my name and the name of Dinah, my spouse, in memory of this day, and of the everlasting friendship between Shechem and Israel. Given in the castle on the 25th day of the month of the harvest home, peace and good health to the receiver. Model and copy. This was the letter. Jacob and his sons withdrew to study it, and when he looked at them, they told him what they had agreed to do in this situation, and he wondered greatly, but could not on principle dissent from their proposal. For the fulfillment of the new condition would not only be a spiritual triumph of real importance, it would also constitute repentance and compensation for the past misdeed. So when they sat again in the presence of the letter-bearers, he left the word to Dinah's offended brethren, and it was Dan who played the spokesman and announced the decision. They were, he said, rich by the grace of God, and set no great store by the amount of the dowry for Dinah their sister, whom Sychem had justly compared with a palm tree and a fragrant pomegranate blossom. Hamor and Sychem might decide as seemed to them commensurate with their dignity. But Dinah had not come to Sychem, as he had been pleased to express it. She had been stolen, and an entirely new situation had thus been created, which the brothers were not prepared to accept without more said. They would therefore lay down the prior condition, that just as Sychem had himself most commendably submitted to be circumcised, all the male citizens of Shechem must now do the same, graybeards, men, and boys, all that had the name of a male in Shechem, on the third day reckoned from the present day, and with stone knives. When that was done, then the wedding feast might be held in good sooth at Shechem, and celebrated amid laughter and shoutings. The condition seemed rather extravagant. At the same time, it would be easy of compliance, and the messengers at once expressed their opinion that Hamor, their lord, would not be behindhand in what was needful. But they were hardly gone before Jacob felt on a sudden the deepest misgiving surge up within him concerning the meaning and intent of the apparently godly stipulation, so that he quaked in his very entrails, and was fain to call back the messengers. For he did not believe that the brethren had forgotten their ancient cravings, nor ever abandoned their revenge for Dinah's seduction and dishonor. And when he considered their late sudden complacence in the light of this new demand, and recalled the look on their savagely gashed faces when Dan spoke of the tumult of the wedding feast, then he marveled at his own stupidity in not comprehending their dark designs the moment they had uttered them. What had put him off was his own pleasure in repetition and recurrence. He had thought of Abraham, how at the Lord's command and in obedience to the covenant, he and his whole house with him, Ishmael and all the servants born in the house or bought with money of any stranger, everything that bore the name of a man-child, was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. And he had realized that the son's stipulation was based on this history. Yes, they had certainly got their idea from it, but how did they think to carry it out? He repeated the story to himself, how that on the third day, when his wound was hot, the Lord came to Abraham to see how he fared, and stood before the house where Eliezer did not see him. But Abram saw him and asked him in. But when the Lord saw him unbind and bind up his wound, he said, "It is not meet that I should stand here." So delicately had God demeaned himself in the presence of Abraham's holy and sacred suffering. And now the brethren, what forbearance had they in mind to display to the ailing citizens of Shechem on the third day when the wound smarted? This kind of recurrence made Jacob shiver, and he shivered again at the look on their faces when the message came from the castle that the condition was readily accepted, and that the general sacrifice would be consummated on the third day of the given term, counting from yesterday. More than once he almost lifted his hands to implore them, but he was afraid of their outraged fraternal feeling, their just right to revenge. He saw that conduct, which once he might have with overwhelming solemnity interdicted, now received from circumstances strong elements of justification. He was even, he discovered, conscious of a little private gratitude towards them for not bringing him into their plot, for keeping him aloof and innocent, so that he need know or suspect nothing unless he liked, but could simply let happen what was to happen. Had not God, the Lord at Bethel, cried out to the sound of the harps that he, Jacob, would possess gates, even the gates of his enemies? And might that not mean that, regardless of his own personal love of peace, it was written in the stars that conquests, wars, and plunderings should accompany his course? Horror, unrest, and a secret pride in the craft and virility of his own seed kept him from slumber. Nor did he sleep at all in that night of terrors, the third night after the expiry of the given term, when he lay in his tent, wrapped in his mantle, and his horror-struck ear caught from afar the noise of armed conflict.